Hello, patrons, and welcome to the April Patron Special.
Thanks for coming, and thank you for all that lovely money.
Thank you very much for that. And as thanks, we are giving you
a special episode.
So this month, we're going to talk about, as promised, what Richard and I would like from the next Star Trek series, which has now been officially announced. It was announced about 4 months ago. It was in 2015, the very end of 2015, I think it's in December. That's just reflexive because it was Paramount for so long. CBS Television put out a press release, I believe, in December of last year, saying that there was going to be a new Star Trek show. No other information about it except for that, and also that it was going to be on something called CBS All Access, which is CBS's attempt at some sort of streaming service, which I think is $5.99 a month.
Oh, God, we have to pay for this?
Why is everyone saying that? I will happily pay for it. We're getting a new Star Trek show. I will happily pay the $5.99. I don't care. I think that
it's the kind of thing where I would pay $5.99 for just the Star Trek, but paying $5.99 for a streaming service, I don't want to do that. But that's just me.
Well, you know, that's just you. But other people feel differently.
I don't want this other crap that I'm not going to watch.
So what? You're paying $5.99 for Star Trek and then cancel it when you're done watching Star Trek.
Yeah, but then I have this other stuff that I feel like I'm not using. It's like when you know, buy a big thing of something and you eat only one.
Do you spend all your time trying to watch everything on Netflix?
Yes, which is why I had a panic attack and had to cancel my Netflix subscription for that year.
You should
remember.
Stop doing that then.
Don't you remember I did a watch of The Cosby Show and That 70s Show the same summer?
I do remember that. So, yeah, so it's going to be a streaming service, and I think that Richard is a perfect example. There's been a lot of grumbling about that. I don't necessarily mind it. I think that Larry Nemechek put it best, where he kind of said that, Star Trek The Next Generation, when it was announced in 1986, and it was going to be this sort of syndicated television series that was kind of paving new ground for, dramatic scripted syndicated television series, because that was something that wasn't really done before Star Trek The Next Generation, believe it or not. I don't know if we ever talked about that in our Star Trek conversations.
A little bit.
But, that was a big change. And that was one of the ways in which Paramount decided to sort of like get this new model out there. I think primarily because they had a lot of success with the original series being in syndication all those years. I mean, one of the reasons why, or maybe the primary reason why, Star Trek The Next Generation happened was because of the success of the TOS movies. And one of the reasons why the TOS movies happened was because of the runaway success of TV stations all across America stripping, which means running 5 days a week in the same time slot, TOS for, a decade. And so they decided to do the syndicated version of Star Trek. And that obviously was a runaway success and led us to Deep Space Nine, led us to Voyager, which actually wasn't syndicated, which we'll talk about when we start talking about Voyager on Trek about in, a year or so, and Enterprise eventually. And then, of course, we all know the story there. So,
well, yeah. So in a lot of cases, so my understanding is this is the first time a network is putting out their own streaming. No, like this is similar to then what HBO does, we assume.
Well, yeah,
it seems like maybe there's going to be some more original content, but you'll probably be able to very easily watch regular CBS shows on this thing.
I would assume so.
Yeah. So maybe it's whatever's on TV plus, certain series like this, and then they may cross-populate in a few years. But
and I think, it's an interesting point, because I think that it's going to be instructive to see how this does, because I think that this really is, CBS All Access exists now. You can pay for it.
Okay.
I don't know that many people do, because number one, it's free to air over the air in America.
Yeah.
And the other thing, of course, is that, if you watch CBS, I mean, I'm making generalizations here, but generally speaking, the audience for network television is older. And the audience for CBS in particular is older than the audience for just network television, the median age of network television in general. So older people have cable, older people.
Yeah.
They have access to watch CBS in the ways they've always watched it.
Yeah, and in a lot of ways I would assume most of the shows are, I'm just going to catch an episode of whatever show. In other words, it's not – well, number one, let me ask the very obvious question. What's on CBS these days?
There's like CSI, there's the Big Bang Theory.
Okay, well, a CSI or a Big Bang Theory, for the most part, like, yes, there are people who are going to be watching, each new episode as it comes out. But for the most part, That's the kind of show where, oh, I'm going to watch a CSI. Like, you watch CSI very differently than you would watch DS9. You know, maybe TNG was a closer model to how you would watch CSI in a way.
Yeah.
In that you'd just catch an episode and it would be very self-contained. But, you know, and obviously that's going to be a thing we're going to be talking about, you know, right, you know, during this conversation, how self-contained ought the new Star Trek to be.
Yes. But, well, I think that you know, just to kind of give a little bit, I think, you know, for the context, I think really it's important because CBS announcing a new Star Trek series on their streaming service is a really, really profound statement, yes. I think, on the value that they place on Star Trek, on its importance to the success or failure of this streaming service.
Yeah, in a way, this is
a big vote of confidence for Star Trek. Yeah, exactly.
This is the thing that, I mean, it's the reason you and I are going to sign up for this thing. It's the reason probably most of our listeners would sign up for this thing, you know, just to get this one show. Like, yeah. I mean, they will certainly make other, you know, depending on the success of this, they will be making other original programming and other types of things, just as, you know, yes. Netflix, you know, started with a couple of things and then, you know, as it had hits like Orange is the New Black or, you know, whatever, it be, you know, BoJack Horseman, it tried different things. So we assume that's the direction this is going to go. But making Star Trek the big kind of first, this is the first big show that's, you know, going to be debuting for that. As you say, that is a very, it's fucking Star Trek is what it's saying in a way.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also think, you know, it's interesting because, you know, aside from that, I also think it's interesting that CBS is doing this now because, you know, CBS is actually doing pretty well. I think The Big Bang Theory, it's like season 8 or 9. It's been on forever, and it still gets, you know, 20 million viewers a week, which in this day and age for network television is amazing. You know, no shows get that anymore.
Yeah, frankly, and, he's going to create another show, which will do, you know, the same, you know, and that'll overlay. So, yeah, they'll be fine in stasis.
But what you see, especially over the past 10 to 15 or 20 years of network television and television in general, is that ratings just keep the audience, the sort of like audience that any one show can expect, mm-hmm. just keeps getting smaller and smaller. And there have been discussions, you know, especially in television critic circles, about the death of network television and which network is going to be the first to just go away. You know, my money's probably on NBC because I just don't think that NBC can make anything happen anymore. And yeah. I think that, you know, they don't have, you know, this could change, of course, but the older people are all sort of stuck in an older model of television, and younger people just don't watch television in the same way anymore. Yeah. And so the numbers aren't there to support the kind of programming that networks generally put out.
So this is, in a way, CBS trying to, in a way, it's being pretty proactive, or maybe, you know, a couple steps behind, but certainly trying, you know, it sees its own death, you know, on the horizon at some point and wants to definitely get I mean, that's a pretty prescient move for it.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's a really, really good vote of confidence on CBS's part that, you know, because they could have put this on Showtime or something.
Yeah.
You know, CBS owns Showtime. And I think that they didn't do that because they want to have this be a CBS show. They want CBS in the minds of the audience. I mean, CBS All Access is how they are branding this. They obviously want CBS to be their brand. And it's really interesting that they're doing this with Star Trek because I think they realize that the audience for Star Trek, while they probably, you know, most people would probably go and try and find it on CBS, they're trying this new thing out as a testbed to see if CBS can sort of make the transition from, you know, an older terrestrial television network model to this new streaming model.
I mean, at this point, you know, also, let's face it, CBS has the data of who's streaming Star Trek on Netflix right now. You know, they know how many people are watching Next Generation and watching DS9 and the original series. And they're, you know, it's fairly light. You know, they have a very good case to say that, you know, a lot of that audience will follow to the new show.
Yeah.
You know, but that does see, you know, it's demonstrated that people will watch Star Trek in this way.
Yes, I think so. And, you know, yeah, there have been criticisms of it. Like, why isn't CBS All Access? Why isn't it Netflix, for example? I mean, I think that some of it is just corporate branding. They want CBS to be the place that people think of when they go to watch Star Trek or go to watch anything. And I also think
they still want to be a network, not just a content creator. I mean, they want to be both in a way. And if they're just licensing it to Netflix, you know, then they're they're still obviously in the role of content creator and producer.
Yes.
But it's not they're not controlling the channel.
That is correct. And I think also, you know, we'll talk about this later, but you know, you bringing up Netflix and sort of how they've sort of developed their original programming, I think is not the way that this is going to go. And
okay.
I say that for very specific reasons, which we can talk about later. But yeah, I think it's an interesting model. I think that it's going to set up the show very nicely for success or failure on its own merits. I mean, some people have said, okay, well, they're handicapping the show, this, that, and the other thing. Maybe they are, but I look at it and I say, this is CBS putting a huge vote of confidence behind the Star Trek name. And, you know, we'll get into the creative staff. We'll get into what we know about the show right now, which is not much. And then we'll get into what we want from it. But, you know, it is something that would be a lot much of a harder sell if they decided to put Star Trek on CBS. I don't think a Star Trek show on network television in 2016, or well, this will be released in 2017, would be a success. And I think that this is their way of sort of, you know, hedging their bets a little bit.
I mean, I'll put it this way. You know, again, this is anecdotal, but I would not watch it if it were just on the TV. I'll come to your house and watch it, you know, of course, but I'll sign up for the service and watch it there.
Yeah, exactly. So let's talk a little bit about who's behind the show now and what we know about it. So when it was announced, they said that Alex Kurtzman was going to be an executive producer, and there was all this sort of grumbling about it because Alex Kurtzman was the guy who executive produced the first two Abrams-directed Star Trek reboots for Paramount.
Which we don't really like as a general rule is the fandom.
Some people like them, some people don't. My personal opinion of them is the first one is fine, the second one is a mess.
Now at this point I've only seen the first one, but that's also not, in a lot of ways, that's not a world I want expanded.
Right.
I
don't know how much we want to talk about the history of Star Trek rights holding and how that's going to maybe interfere with the only reason I would want to talk about it is because it may impact what universe the show is set in.
That's fair.
But anyway, so when this was announced, that Alex Kurtzman was going to be an executive producer, everyone freaked out. You know, I did not freak out. I think people that kind of understand television didn't freak out because the executive producer is the guy who's making it happen, but he's not necessarily the showrunner. He's not necessarily going to have many creative input, right?
He's the money guy. He's hiring. He's, you know, making sure that everybody's getting paid and, you know,
right.
You know, the locations are, you know, set in that thing.
Right. And the other thing, too, of course, is that he has executive produced television shows. That the thing about Alex Kurtzman that is interesting to know is that he does executive produce a lot of other television shows, and his shows come in on time and on budget. So that is why they picked him, I think.
Yeah.
And also the fact that he did have some Star Trek experience. So, okay, we know that. And then nothing happens for, you know, 2 months, right? Which makes sense because this announcement was made, I think, right before Christmas or shortly before Christmas in 2015. And then, of course, in I think it was January or February, they make this huge announcement about the show that Brian Fuller is going to be the showrunner. And, you know, Brian Fuller is someone that I don't know if Richard knows a lot about. I mean, you know,
let's assume I know everything, but I really want the person in the – I want Johnny Wilson in the audience who is our, you know, giving us $50 a month, you know, but he doesn't know anything about Brian Fuller. I want him to know.
So Brian Fuller got his start on DS9. He wrote a couple of DS9 episodes, which we haven't seen yet.
I was about to ask.
Then he moved on to Voyager and wrote a few episodes on Voyager. Apparently did not have a good time on Voyager, did not have a good time in the Voyager writing room. Which we will get to when we talk about Voyager and why Voyager is sort of the redheaded stepchild of the Star Trek franchise, which has a lot to do with sort of the creative decisions and who was in charge. And then he went off and started making his own show. So he did Dead Like Me, which he did the first episode of and then was unceremoniously fired from it. So he had nothing to do with it after that first episode.
I really like that show.
Doesn't really say much about, you know, what kind of showrunner Brian Fuller is because he was not involved in it. I like the first season of Dead Like Me. I don't like the second season, but anyway. Then he went on to do Wonder Falls for Fox, which was canceled after a season.
But I like to.
I like that show. Then he went on to do, I think it was Pushing Daisies after that, which
I David.
I didn't like as much. I think the visual style of it was very interesting. And, you know, funnily enough, it was his biggest success. It was on ABC, and I think it was 2007, which was the same year the writer's strike happened, the Writers Guild of America strike happened. And so, you know, people outside of America may not remember this, and people inside of America may not remember it either. But the Writers Guild went on strike, I think, for like 6 months. And basically, there were no new episodes of anything being created at that point. So a lot of
A ton of shows were abbreviated, if I remember.
Yeah, the first season of Breaking Bad was only, I think, 7 seasons because of the writer's strike. Pushing Daisies kind of, I think, did 20 episodes or something, and then they went out of production. And they went out of production for like 6 months. And the ratings for the show were quite good. And then when it came back like 13 months later, the momentum had been lost and it was canceled. And then he did Hannibal, and I think that had 4 seasons on NBC, and that was just canceled.
Yeah, but that, you know, from what I know, like, Hannibal, though, had one of those huge cult audiences. Like, I have friends on Twitter, you know, some of whom may be here who just are tweeting about it every week and just fucking love the show.
So Brian Fuller, I think, well, this is what I want to get to. Is I think Brian Fuller is an interesting choice because Brian Fuller is someone who has a very, very distinctive voice. He's someone who is very inclusive. You know, his shows have a lot of racial diversity. His shows have, you know, a lot of gay characters as well, which is something that Star Trek really wants, which is something we'll get into. And, you know, but at the same time, he's not, he's a fan favorite. You know, he's kind of a cult favorite. He makes a lot of shows that people really love.
I mean, I would very much, given the choice between a slick mainstream or a weird culty version of Star Trek, I want the latter, you know.
Yes. And I think also it's interesting that they pick Brian Fuller because he's someone who, while he does have Star Trek experience, he is not, very much not, of the old Star Trek vanguard.
He's not Inner Circle.
He's not Rick Berman. He's not Brian Braga.
He's not Ron Moore.
He's not Ron Moore. He's not Ira Stephen Baer. You know, those are, I mean, maybe some of those people will be involved at some point. I don't know. I don't, I would kind of doubt it, but it's an interesting choice. And then, of course, the news came out about a month after that that someone made the decision, probably Brian Fuller, that they were going to bring Nick Meyer on as a producer and a writer, you know, of course, who is most famous for writing and directing The Wrath of Khan.
Yeah.
So they've got their sort of Star Trek bona fides in line. They kind of know, I think, what they're making all the right moves to make me feel good about where they're going with the show. And they also announced, I think, like a few weeks ago that Rod Roddenberry is going to be an executive producer on the show or a producer. And that's, you know, people kind of were like, what the hell? Like, he doesn't have any production television experience. It's like, that's a name thing.
It's to have the family's blessing.
Right. Exactly.
He's taking on his father. Oh, that's actually really sweet. Mm-hmm. And in a way, though it isn't, it's that itself is also an imprimatur in another way.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
It's going to be true to that vision because that's what, you know, is the most, you know, I think what we have always agreed when Star Trek is the best is when it does have a bit of a message. You know, the reason that I didn't love the first, you know, JJ Trek, and I think people generally don't like it is because it doesn't have, you know, in a way that vision first.
And it's also a very tired story. It's something that had been floating around for years.
Okay.
It was, I think the story was originally supposed to be like Star Trek VI or something. Yeah. So anyway, but that's but, kind of irrelevant. But yeah, and so I think that you know, Brian Fuller is making all of the right moves. I think CBS All Access is an interesting choice. I think CBS is obviously putting a lot of resources behind this, a lot of money behind this. And, you know, as news starts to come out about casting, as news starts to come out about who else is going to be writing on the show, this has to happen fairly soon. They're going to have to make some announcements about where this, you know, what timeline this is going to be set in, all of these things.
Again, it may even be as simple as the second you announce, you know, character names, you know, that has to, you know.
Well, absolutely. I mean, if like they announce that, you know, whoever is playing Jean-Luc Picard,
yes,
then we know it's a TNG reboot. Which I do not want it to be.
You know, if this is a, or even for this matter, if this is something that has, you know, the captain is Nog, for example, that gives, you know, an idea of timeline and area as well. But one of the things I liked about, I guess I want to talk about Nicholas Meyer for a second in Wrath of Khan, because the reason I really loved Wrath of Khan was because it took a very serious look at, the original series in a lot of ways, in a way that Star Trek the Motion Picture didn't quite do. You know, in a way, it's almost a deconstructive read of the original series in that, you know, Kirk is always going around. He's declaring a problem solved and then he's leaving and, you know, he never really checks back on anything. Wrath of Khan is all about, you know, the chickens coming home to roost, something that he left unfinished, something that he didn't quite do right, coming back to bite him, and now he has to actually solve his problem.
Yeah.
Also, it gave more of a, in a way, seriousness to the world. The things, for example, the uniforms, you know, that he made it kind of very naval looking, you know, the fact that they were using some very serious emotions behind these characters. It's a very serious take on the original series. One of the reasons I love DS9 is because that's a very serious look at the Next Generation in a lot of ways.
Yes.
In that it's taking some of the implications of things to get one of the big one of the big examples is this treaty that's, you know, with the Cardassians that's in a couple of TNG episodes. And then, DS9 looks at that and says, well, you know, that dissatisfaction leads to the Maquis, for example.
Yeah.
I would really be interested in a Star Trek show which is that to the J.J. Abrams Trek.
That's interesting. I would not be.
No, but I mean, like, not in that because Kirk and all in that are the very, you know, they're a very slick action hero incarnation of that. And I don't think they're necessarily a captain that we are supposed to want to emulate in the same way that we want to emulate the original Kirk or Jean-Luc Picard or Sisko in any way.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. It would be – I always like when, you know, you and I have talked a bit about how we might want maybe a – you know, to see a little more grunt level work, for example, not the elite of the, you know, not the big hotshots, you know, maybe, you know, you joke, yeah, you can talk about your Starfleet Academy idea, but
that's not my idea.
No. What was the one that you joke about David Simon doing?
Oh, just like a look at like how the Federation government works. Yeah.
You know, that kind of a show. It would be very interesting to see that overstructure to, you know, the slick action movie version, you know, the reality in a way behind what's, you know, the day to day of that universe.
Well, here's my question. Okay. So I have kind of a dream, you know, setting for the show.
Yeah.
So is that a setting you're interested in seeing, or is that your preferred dream setting?
No, I guess when we were talking about how to do this podcast, I guess the way I approached, you know, mm-hmm. organizing my thoughts was if CBS went to me and said, okay, you know, you're going to have a pitch meeting. Okay, so, you know, I come up with 5 pitches in my head, for example.
Yeah.
These are ideas that I would float by and, you know, maybe you'd be interested in this. So that would be kind of an idea that I might be interested in looking at or seeing, you know, that kind of a approach to it. It's not necessarily the one thing that I hope it is.
Right, yeah.
We'll talk about your dream.
Well, I think it's very simple. I mean, I don't think that – I think all the evidence that's coming out around the new show, about the next movie, Star Trek Beyond, which is coming out in a few months, I think that the Abrams reboot of Star Trek is going to end up being a dead end. I don't see a lot of evidence coming out of everything that has been coming out around Star Trek 2017 that indicates in any way, shape, or form that it is going to take place in the reboot universe. And I also think that there are some pretty significant legal challenges surrounding the rights to that reboot universe that make it very difficult for it to take place in that universe. And I also don't see them doing a second separate reboot because that would be very confusing.
Yes, of course. And I, in a way, that is kind of fine that this J.J. Abrams thing are a weird little side story. I think that's...
I think it's kind of a missed opportunity. I think that, you know, my dream kind of scenario for Star Trek 2017 is pretty simple. What's now called the Prime Universe, which is the, you know, 750 episodes of television and 9 or 10 movies that take place, you know, TOS, TNG, DS9, Voyager, and Enterprise, and the movies involved in that.
Up until 2009, what was known as Star Trek.
Yes. that is a universe that is ripe with possibility. Mm-hmm. It's very, very well done. It's very well constructed. You know, there are obviously a lot of dead ends. There are a lot of lore and continuity and all sorts of things, canon, that is messy. And I think that some of the writers, especially in Voyager and Enterprise, got a little too, you know, bogged down or sort of intimidated by it. I mean, Brian Braga, let's be clear, let's put our cards on the table, is not as talented as Brian Fuller, frankly. Huh. And so, you know, I think that the dream scenario really is to make it as simple as possible. And I think that, you know, to look back at, and I think it's interesting that they are bringing Nick Meyer in, because I think that that is a look back to Star Trek. And that is a very clear indication that they are making this about like sort of a former way of this, and kind of the simplest thing to do would be to keep it in the same universe and just put it ahead 100 years like they did TNG.
Yeah, this is the TNG to the era of TNG in a way.
You know, and that would be the simplest way to do it. I think it would be the most interesting. I think that it gives them a lot of room to reset the galactic table, to sort of ignore species they don't want to talk about, to bring in species that they do want to talk about.
To change species that they want. Again, they could do a third incarnation of Klingons.
Yeah, which I would recommend against. But
you know, but it's the kind of thing that they could do. They could put social changes into a, you know, what, again, I, and this
Social changes. Yeah, I thought you meant like actual physical changes.
No. Like what's, you know, the Klingons are not, you know, the Klingons have changed culturally in the 100 years between original series and now, and, you know, in another 100 years, where are the Romulans going to be? Where are the Vulcans going to be? You know, there are a lot.
Where is the Federation?
Yeah.
You know, like I think that, you know, that would be the simplest way to do it, you know, just to say, because everyone is saying, well, how could they do that? How could they make the technology feel futuristic? You know, all this kind of stuff. And it's like, they're creative people. They'll figure that out.
Frankly, we're
not as creative as the people that are going to be working on this show.
I got to be honest. Like, there is some iconic technology to the show, but for the most part, that's all from the original series. You know, transporters have been there for the beginning. You know, the phasers, tricorders, all of that. You know, what?
Warp drive.
Yeah, all of that is, and really we haven't seen, you know, from original series to TNG, you know, the replicators and the holodeck are the only really big things, but they're, again, extrapolations of ideas, and everything is just redesigned to look futuristic for that decade. So, I mean, they don't, Star Trek for me has never been about showing off these amazing technologies that I'm not being geeked out by, you know, fantastic inventions from week to week.
And it would
sometimes it, you know, it's based on a new technology, and yeah, a script writer is always going, there will always be science fiction writers who can invent, you know, it's spur of the moment new technologies for an episode. That will always be. So that's not a problem to me.
Yes, I don't think it's a problem, and I also think it looks at Star Trek from the wrong angle, because I think one of the reasons why, you know, Voyager in particular is while it's not as bad a show as everyone says it is, and we'll, you know, obviously when we get to that in Trek About, we'll have interesting conversations about, you know, Voyager, but I mean, maybe Richard is scared, I don't know.
I am so scared of Voyager. I just hope Tuvok will see me through it.
He will. Tuvok loves you, even though he's a Vulcan. He doesn't show it, but he loves you.
He has an appreciation for the logic behind my mind.
Yes. You know, it's something very simple to do. You know, just kind of hand wave it away and say, oh, they have some new form of propulsion and now they're off exploring another galaxy. You know, people, I think Star Trek fans in particular tend to overthink these things. And if you look at what they did with TNG, I don't think they overthought it. I think they just said, you know what? It's 100 years later. We've got this huge ship. There's families on it now. And yes, there were missteps. And yes, the show was perhaps, you know, not as good as it could have been in the first and second seasons.
Yeah.
But conceptually, I think it was pretty sound. And the idea of going forward, leaving all of the baggage of the original series universe behind and saying, this is a completely new place setting. This is a completely new area of the galaxy. This is a completely new way we're telling these stories, worked really well. And I think that that's the simplest way to do it. And I think that that's probably the most effective.
I mean, that was very literally the pilot of, you know, that was the plot of Encounter at Farpoint, is that, you know, humans have gone to the point where they're going beyond where they ordinarily, you know, kind of hung out, and they're about to see some weird shit. And, you know, while obviously it was not as planned ahead as this show is likely to be. That included the Borg. That included, you know, the Q. That included all of the weird shit that they saw in TNG.
Right.
And, you know, then you have DS9 dealing with the Gamma Quadrant, and then Voyager is going to be dealing with yet another, correct?
Yes.
And so you have all of these,
you know, they've got their bases covered with this galaxy.
But in a way, like, each show, like, expands the boundaries and deals with the majesty and the terror of dealing with something that, you know, going off into the unknown. That has always been the kind of the where the show has gained a lot of its power from, is that any week anything could happen, and it could be the coolest, you know, society that we ever thought of, or it could be the most horrifying alien monster that we have to deal with. But, you know, it's going beyond the boundaries. So, yeah, that may be a perfect – now we're going beyond the galactic boundaries.
Yeah.
Now we're even going further. And, you know,
and I think, you know, I don't want to see it be the first – like, I think a really – I mean, I, you know, again, this is my dream scenario for the show, my dream setting for the show. But, you know, it's the 25th century.
Yeah.
It's a new type of ship. They're out in another galaxy exploring. It's you know, terra incognita for the Federation and Starfleet. You know, I wouldn't want to see this become a retread of Voyager. I wouldn't want to see them be the first ship to go out there. I think that what would be really, really a good way for this show in particular to go is to say, okay, well, you know, the Federation and Starfleet have had this new technology to go to the other galaxies now for you know, maybe 10 years or something. They've established a star base in this new galaxy. There's, you know, four ships out there exploring or something like that. And then this is, you know, of course it's going to be the Enterprise. I mean, I don't think there's any way, shape or form that this show is not going to be about a ship called Enterprise. I also do think that it's very likely that it's called just Star Trek. But, you know, aside from that, I think it's kind of a back to basics thing. It's a very sort of good way to go.
But, you know, that actually makes a lot of thematic sense, too, given the – in a lot of ways, we have talked about the Federation representing America in some ways. In the original series, this is, you know
– I think the Federation –
And in a lot of ways, you know, yes, it's that's a week, and I'm using, you know, the term symbolically in some ways, but there is a vision, you know, maybe that whole give me your tired, your poor kind of incarnation of America that the Federation tries to be. And some of the original series was showing some of the issues with, you know, America today, the way it, you know, dealt with race issues, the way it dealt with the issues of the Cold War, and saying, you know, the way we are acting is not up to our ideals. TNG comes along and sees that, you know, even in that there were some, you know, TNG is coming from a very more melting pot view of humanity, you know, that we all have differences, but we are all, you know, we all can work together, and that we all – DS9 is very much going into the view of, you know, that doesn't really work, and there are some, you know – other perspectives, other national perspectives are just as equally valid at this point. And, you know, we can be completely different, and you can't, you know, necessarily say, you know, maybe the earlier version was saying, you know, you can all, you know, we all get along and have the right ideas, meaning my ideas.
I would restate that a little bit.
Okay.
I think that TNG is much more about a sort of 80s and 90s form of multiculturalism, which, you know, is not the melting pot. You know, the melting pot is very much about everyone comes here and becomes American.
Okay, fair.
And the multiculturalism is, no, people come here, but they
salad metaphor.
Exactly. And I think that DS9 is taking that and saying, okay, we've got this multicultural society. What does that mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, what I think that going into another galaxy could be the Federation. And again, I don't know where Enterprise or Voyager take these themes, but, you know, as you say, four ships in a big galaxy, that's, you know, a former superpower just in an area where it doesn't really have that much power as it used to. And, you know, there are other things, there are other values that, you know, maybe it's the, rather than trying to, you know, because the Federation wants to convert everybody and have everybody be happy.
Well, let's not say convert. I don't think they want to convert people, but.
I don't know. They want everybody to become Federation members, and they will tolerate, you know, they will treasure their differences, and they will use that, but they will all be under the Federation label.
Yeah, but I mean, the Federation is, and I think this is important for the new show as well.
I
don't want the Federation to become some sort of, you know, Borg-like entity. You know,
and maybe this, you know, maybe this could be about, you know, getting it to avoid being that, like that, the kind of that being a bad thing, because I think you and I would agree that making everybody be Federation, you know, going out into the other galaxy to have everyone join the Federation is a bad idea. That's not that different from, you know, what the Dominion might have wanted.
Well, I think that, I mean, this is going maybe a little bit far afield, but I think you and I have different views on that. I don't think that Star Trek, as it's been portrayed in the original series, TNG or so far in DS9, is really about the Federation going out and saying, hey, everyone should be a part of the Federation because we're just so great. I think it's more about, hey, we're going to help you. If you want to be a part of the Federation, great. If you don't want to, that's fine too. You know, and I think that you see that with like the Klingons, for example, and certainly the, you know, where we are in Trek about the alliance with the Klingons is having problems right now, but the alliance is still there.
But that's the thing, like the Klingons are strong enough to be able to go kind of toe to toe. I think one of, you know, remember the root beer conversation, that's, you know, Quark talking and saying, you know, it's sticky, sickeningly sweet, but you know, after a while it's good. And you know, there are plenty of planets that really do need the help, and really Bajor is the perfect example of somebody who isn't, can't, you know, can't stand independently maybe on their own, and you know, is going to want to, you know, have the Federation's help, and the Federation is going to seduce it into its life. I don't think that the Federation has sinister motives, but it's just going to...
Yeah, the words you're using, though, I just seduce, convert, I just, it doesn't...
I don't know, maybe that's my darker take on...
I think it is, yeah, and that's something that I want the new show to stay far away from. You know, I think there's been a lot, you know, the conversations, well, the Federation has failed, you know, the Federation has collapsed, they had a huge war, like... I don't want any of that stuff. That's cliche. We've seen that over and over again. I mean, that's what Babylon 5 was about. That's what Battlestar Galactica was about. I mean, that's what, you know, Stargate Universe. I mean, it's like we've seen the dark versions of this. I think that at this point it is more, it would be much more of a profound and important and sort of, you know, groundwork statement to say this is going to be an optimistic show about all kinds of different people coming together for a common purpose. And have it be the optimistic take on the future that I think we need right now and that we haven't had for a long time.
Well, I guess maybe what I mean is that kind of a view could be – because I think you can have both. Because I think, you know, I would rather see a version of the Federation that changes or that, you know, becomes better. Because, you know, one of the things I really liked about, you know, TNG is that, you know, every time there is a problem, you know, the people work it out and they become better people. You know, the Federation has a problem, but, you know, they ultimately do the right thing at the end. And so, you know, maybe you do have a version of the Federation that is a little full of itself at this point and, you know, is suddenly in an area where it's not really that, you know, big. And it frankly is humbled and has to take that because, I mean, again, you and I have talked about this in our own conversations, you know, about, you know, America needs to come to a reckoning with itself and it needs to, you know, realize the way, you know, realize its history of inequality, racial and, you know, sexual and otherwise. And
I don't think the Federation has those types of problems, though.
And
so I think that that's kind of a weird place to go with it.
Okay, that's and maybe that's just because I want to find a way of the show speaking to maybe more of the world today rather than, you know, the Star Trek world.
Well, I think that the show – I mean, that's the other thing. So I also think that the show is going to – or I mean, I don't know if the show will, but I think it will. But I also want the show to reflect – the realities of the world in which we live in now. And I think that the way you do that is the way that Star Trek has always done that, which is to tell allegorical stories about other alien cultures. I don't think it needs to be about the Federation.
Okay.
I think actually that's probably the wrong way to go.
That's fair.
I think that that's very inside baseball, actually. I don't think that, you know, if this is a show that they're going for a mass audience for, most people are not going to watch the show because this is the new version of DS9.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Like, no, I mean, and maybe in a way this show does have to be the, you know, maybe we need to establish the universe first. So yes, maybe this does need to be the TNG where, I think it is true that, you know, we need a Star Trek that's just about a ship dicking around in space and, you know, finding cool shit.
Because let's be clear. This Star Trek is in this position because that version of Star Trek failed.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
maybe Star Trek 2022 is the show I'm looking for.
Maybe, you know, it could be, but I think that this really is, you know, everyone's saying this should be about this. This should be about that. No, this show is the clearing of the deck. This is the new Star Trek.
Yeah.
You know, this has to be this has to have a really strong message. This has to have a really strong premise. It has to have really good characters, really good writing. I mean, everything about it has to be top notch, and I think it will be. But yeah, all these questions about what is this, what is the world going to be and what's the Federation going to be like? These are interesting questions for us, but I think that what we need to come back to is to say, what is this show? Is this going to be more like DS9 or is this going to be more like TNG?
No, and
I think it's
going to
be more like TNG because, you know, Star Trek has been off the air for 11 years now. You know, Enterprise was canceled in 2005. Obviously, that's a shorter amount of time than elapsed between the end of the original series and TNG, but not that much more. Or not that much less,
about
actually.
20?
1969 to 1986 is when TNG was announced. So that's, you know, 17 years. That's not that much more time, honestly.
5 more years only.
Yeah. And by the time this show comes out, Star Trek will have been off the air for about 12 years. So this is, and a lot has changed in television in that 12 years as well, which is something we can't really ignore.
Well, you know, one of the things that we, again, talked about and were surprised with and loved about TNG was that it did take its world serious again. It did, you know, it world built by accretion. In other words, you know, it would add a new thing in every episode, and every so often it would look at an older episode and would say, oh, let's, you know, take another angle of that. So, you know, for example, they'd, you know, go on a planet and then they'd, you know, revisit the problems of the planet, for example. Now, given how television is written now versus how it was written, you know, it's very clear that the world building would probably be much more deliberate, much more ahead of time. You know, somebody is going to – there is going – not that they didn't sit down and say, you know, where is the Federation now? What are – you know, what are the Vulcans doing when they started TNG? But I would say there is going to be more of a complete picture. These – but, you know, maybe there will be a season-long plot line. You know, you can have an episodic you know, they're going from planet to planet for a little while and still have some overarching. Frankly, you could do that very easily.
Which is interesting because I think that, again, you have to look at Brian Fuller's past work on that. And yes, I would, you know, to be clear, I mean, this is what we want to see from the new show. I would want to see a more interconnected from episode to episode. You know, I don't think you can do a TNG style thing. I mean, I think TNG was very good. I think TNG gets a lot of, you know, sort of flack maybe for not being serialized. And it certainly wasn't. But it did have continuity between episodes. Characters did change.
Well, DS9 handles, I mean, again, it wouldn't take the tone maybe of DS9, but the structure of DS9 where, you know, you would have occasionally two or three episodes where you'd have a three-parter, or you'd have a plot that's, you know, they develop it a little bit in each episode, but the characters grow and change. And yet it is still very self-contained. Each episode is about something.
I think it's going to be – I mean, I would like to see it be – more interconnected, at least on a character level. I don't think it's going to be something like Game of Thrones, which is, frankly, each episode of Game of Thrones is just a pile of plot that happens. And while the episodes kind of veer from topic to topic in sort of haphazard fashion, I think that there is some sort of plan there. But it also is just Game of Thrones is the epitome of that kind of television show.
Oh,
and
yeah,
I don't want
not
it to become that. I think that if you look at it in terms of Brian Fuller's past work, I mean, I have not seen Hannibal. But, you know, certainly Pushing Daisies was not super serialized.
No.
You know, certainly, you know, but again, Pushing Daisies was also 10 years ago. So
it's the kind of thing where you could, frankly, let's say you have the season where the Romulans have a plot. Let's, you know, whatever that it is going to be. And, you know, so you have 15 episodes and, like, yes, episodes 2, 6, you know, 13, 14, and 15 are devoted to this Romulan plot. The others are just random adventures they have. And every so often, you know, you have an adventure where a Romulan and, you know, a Federation are on a planet and they have to escape together and you find out a little deal. Like, they could do that kind of a thing, still have something that's, again, that's frankly Buffy-style storyline. I think Buffy-style storyline would work very well for this because that, you know, is a very good mixture of self-contained episodes, but still looking a season at a time into something a little bigger or a more complicated, a bigger threat.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I don't really want the show to have
big bads.
Yeah, I don't think that that's where I would like this show to go.
I don't know. Maybe not. It depends. It's the kind of thing that could be done very well or very poorly. It really depends on what the plot would be. You know, Buffy was great when it's the mayor or Glory, but when it's Adam, it's bullshit.
Yeah, but at the same time, Buffy was a very different show that was about that. And yes, Star Trek is not necessarily about big bads.
No,
so I wouldn't want to see that kind of thing. I mean, maybe you do, and that's fine. I mean, that's, you know, we're different in that way.
That's, I think I do want to see that.
Let's, you're wrong. Let's talk about the characters and sort of like, we have no idea what the characters are going to be.
No.
But I think that there two things are clear, at least from Brian Fuller's past work. Number one, women are going to have a significant role in this show.
Yeah.
And I would obviously, I think, well, maybe not obviously, I would like to take that a step further, and I would like to see this be a majority female cast.
That can be, yeah, that can be very easily done these days. I mean, you know.
I would like to see it be a female captain. I would like to see it be a female first officer. I would, you know, I think that having a majority female cast that's racially diverse would be the way to go.
You're going to have no, I mean, frankly, you're not going to have no shortage of actors and actresses who want to be on this thing.
Yes. And someone told me the other day that actor is the preferred term now.
Really?
Actress, don't use the word actress. I don't know.
Well, you know, there are no shortage of people who are going to beg for a gig on this.
So, and the other thing I think is that we need to talk about with Brian Fuller is the gay character thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, we haven't really, we talked about this a little bit when we talked about Rejoined from, you know, last month or whatever it was. We need gay characters on Star Trek.
Yeah,
and it's past time, and I think it's going to happen.
I mean, I frankly, I think I've talked about this a bit. The one in The Outcast, the planet that has the genderless species. I would love to see a Federation character who is, you know, from that planet. I think that would be a
Starfleet character.
A Starfleet character, you know, so one of, because, you know.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
Yeah, just, you know, to have, and not that you necessarily want a character going, you know, around and saying, you people with gender, that's, you know, but, you know, for, you know, dealing with situations in a different way would be a way of making, you know, again, inclusivity, again, a way of addressing issues of gender in a way that, you know, science fiction can do very well.
Yeah.
By giving, you know, a concept for which to take an angle into a metaphor.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, that would be, you know, I think that would be, you know, an interesting angle. I definitely would agree. We need to have some gay characters on this show because that, you know, the point of Star Trek was always we're going to, you know, be a step or two ahead of everyone else.
Yes.
At this point, you know, the very, you know, setting aside the question of whether, you know, the Federation is the, you know, whether Starfleet is a military or not, our real life military is, you know, has women and gays allowed to serve.
Yeah.
So,
and women are now allowed to serve in combat roles.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's
so,
you know,
we
need to take a little bit further.
It needs to be at least as inclusive as the real world.
Otherwise. And I mean, frankly, I mean, I would like to see a trans actor in the show. You know, playing a trans character, I think that would be really interesting. And I think that's something that Star Trek obviously hasn't done before.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's obviously from Orange is the New Black.
I would.
But I don't think that she would be in the show just because she is in Orange is the New Black. But there are other trans actors out there.
Well, that was the thing I was just about to say. I am blanking on her name right now, by the way.
I don't know her name either, actually. I feel bad. But.
But as I said, there are other trans actors. Like, she's not the only one out there. And, you know, she's great. She deserves all of her success. But as well, we need more than just one, if you know what I mean.
Yes. And I also think, too, that also brings up another important point, which is to say that I think I would not like to see the new show cast big names.
That's.
I would like them to stay away from that because if you look at who they cast in TNG and DS9 and Voyager, these were not big names. And I think Enterprise, you know, Scott Bakula is kind of a big name, I guess. But for the most part, they stayed away from that. I think.
I mean, Shatner was ish.
Shatner wasn't a big name.
But, you know, well, I guess he'd done other stuff. But
he'd done other stuff, but it wasn't like they cast, you know, Rock Hudson for
and
the
Patrick
show.
Stewart was mostly known for theater at that point.
Yeah.
As
I
well,
mean, I think the biggest name that they cast in TNG was probably LeVar Burton at that point.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would like to see them stay away from big names. I mean, you know, maybe have a middling, you know, sort of character actor or something that some people know. But for the most part, I mean, there's all this talk about Brian Fuller said he would love to cast Angela Bassett as the captain. Okay.
I would be cool. And it didn't you say Rosario Dawson as the
first officer?
And
yeah,
she's totally a lesbian and she's awesome and she just like kicks ass. But
which would be fine. But I don't know that I want. I think that having
they're too
those,
big for
I think
what
having you. Those characters be women and be non-white maybe, would be really an interesting way to go and the right way to go, but maybe not those particular actors.
Yes, the kind of – in a way that – I don't know. Part of it is because I can imagine the performances that they would give, and it would be really cool to watch. Like, they will do a damn good job with it. At the same time, you know, in the, you know, getting different people and getting unknowns and all of that, I agree with on that level, maybe.
And also, frankly, I think, too, that you avoid the problem that I think the Abrams Star Trek has had with casting bigger names. You know, certainly... you know, Chris Pine was not a huge name when he was cast in that, but he's become one. I think.
Let me put it this way: every time I see, I never say that Spock. I said, "Hey, it's Zachary Quinto."
Right.
There is. It's one of those side effects of doing shows like this that you do get typecast and you get identified very much with the characters. At the same time, that is kind of, again, the power of being on a show like this, you know, to that, you know, Patrick Stewart will always be Jean-Luc Picard, that William Shatner will always kind of be Captain Kirk. You know, there is a cachet to that.
Yes. Yes, exactly. So, yeah, I think that's pretty much it. I think, you know, have it be 100 years in the future. Have it just be as simple as possible, not a reboot, take place in the same universe, but just ignore the continuity that you don't want to deal with. You know, have it be racially and sexually diverse, and, you know, have it be more serialized. I think that you know, it doesn't need to be much more complicated than that.
I'm sure we could do it.
Oh, yeah, well, I'm sure we could. I don't envy... It's weird. Like, on the one hand, I envy Brian Fuller.
We could have, like, two characters on our crew who just, like, make jokes and talk about, like, TV all the time.
That would be wonderful. I envy Brian Fuller for taking the reins of Star Trek. It's something that he loves. Yeah. I mean, it's exciting for him, I'm sure. But at the same time, man, he's got a huge responsibility here.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I
and
mean,
if he fucks this up,
well, that was what going into Next Generation. You know, maybe not. You know, there obviously wasn't quite as big of a behemoth weight over that, but, you know, we know how much...
There was. Are you kidding me? There was.
Compared to Star Trek now?
I think so, yes.
Okay. Well, either way,
Because really the difference here is that this has successfully been done before.
That's true.
It had never been successfully done. There was a lot of skepticism about TNG and
yeah, but I mean,
and
you know,
TNG was not seen as Star Trek by Star Trek fans for years.
Yeah,
it took them a long time to be accepted. This was not an easy thing for them at all, and a lot of people didn't think it was gonna work.
And I guess one of
and then of course they got the first season of TNG, which maybe they were kind of like, see, we were right.
Well, you know, again, and my thing is, you know, TNG was very lucky that it was given a season and a half to two seasons to kind of suck a little bit and to find its legs. And then because, you know,
this show does not have that luxury.
That was going to be my question. Like, if this is OK, I mean, how long is CBS going to be able to prop this thing up? Because maybe it would give it if the first season is 100%, maybe it will give it another just because. All right. Well, we're doing this with a new service, like we need, you know, we're prepared to let it, you know, eat a year in order to, you know.
I mean, I think if you look at the shows that Brian Fuller has done in the past, I don't think that there's much chance of the show not being well written and not being engaging out of the gate.
Yeah.
And I think that that's partially why they chose him, because I think they know that he can do it. But yeah, the show does not have the luxury of
three TNG seasons before
being terrible in the first season and still, you know, being on the air. I mean, you know, television is just different now and they just don't have that luxury. Yeah. So
now, one question I have: maybe we don't know this. Are they releasing it week to week or all at once?
We don't know. That's you know, we don't know what the release schedule is like. We don't know how many episodes there are going to be in the season.
Okay,
we don't know if they're going to be seasons. I mean, you know, this is all very new. I mean, television.
You know, are they going to do six episodes now, and then, you know, in a year we'll do another, you know, however, or, you know, we're just going to film these as we can? Or?
Yeah, we don't know. We have no idea. And, you know, we're in April now, and they have the first episode supposedly coming out in January of 2017. So
yeah,
they've got to get going, and they are getting going. I mean, they're obviously having story meetings. They're obviously fleshing out the world and where this is going to be set and having arguments about it. Yeah, I think it's a really exciting time to be a Star Trek fan. I mean, I kind
isn't it always?
Went, not really. It was pretty dark back in like the mid-2000s. Enterprise was off the air. Everyone was like, well, Star Trek is done. And, you know, obviously it's not. Star Trek endures. But, you know, I think that if you look at, I think, you know, maybe as a final point before we wrap this, you know, April Patron special up, is that look at like the Doctor Who reboot from 10 years ago.
Do I have?
And, well, you know, while it had problems and while it, you know, yeah, is not for everybody, Russell T. Davies was able to keep the same continuity and keep the same, you know, kind of tone a little bit for Doctor Who while modernizing it and making it relevant for a new audience. And I think that that's kind of what Brian Fuller and company have in store for them right now. That's the job they have in front of them.
See, again, and I was about to say, you know, well, Doctor Who at least has the concept of renewal built into the premise, you know, in that, you know, the actors can change, you know, canonically as part of the but again, because we have TNG and we have, you know, shows like DS9, which take a very different view of and which can show that the Star Trek universe is flexible, because that in a way that's the other point. Doctor Who has to focus on this one character. You can't have Doctor Who without the Doctor. And
you can, actually. They've done it.
They have.
They film one episode a season without him.
Well, but as a gimmick. I mean, you know, put it this way, like, they can't have, you know, the next season of Doctor Who is, you know, the Doctor is dead and forever and it's 100 years later and we're focusing on a completely different character that has no, you know, Star Trek can do that. It doesn't have to always be about Captain Kirk. You know, the setting is more,
yes,
of the main character in, yes, some ways. And so,
and that's why I hope they don't fall into the trap, yeah, of making this a reboot of TNG or yet another reboot of TOS or something, yeah, like that. I want them to stay away from that because, you know, and again, I think that, you know, I don't think TOS needed to be rebooted. I don't think it's necessary. I also don't think that there's a lot of other areas that you could go in that are more interesting. And I don't think that doing a reboot of TNG is necessary, frankly, because, yeah, TNG is so fucking good.
Yeah.
Like, I think it would be kind of, you know, insulting to the memory of TNG and these actors to say, you know, we need to, yeah, reboot this. Like, it's not, who needs that?
I mean, you know, the JJ Trek was not necessarily insulting to the actors, but it approached it, I felt. You know, this would definitely be a slap in the face.
I think so.
You know, especially aren't all of the main cast with us still?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are. I mean, I don't think any of them have died yet.
No.
So, I mean, I don't know who's going to be first to go. Probably Patrick Stewart. But,
yeah, but
you know,
they're, you know, not that old yet even.
No. I mean, Patrick Stewart, I think, is like 60s. 75 or something. Yeah, but, you know.
Still.
So we'll see. I don't know. If you would like to give us your thoughts on this and maybe tell us we're wrong or right, you know, you can always send us an email at trekaboutshow@gmail.com. Or you can leave a comment on the post for this episode of the podcast at trekaboutshow, which does not actually have the podcast because we're trying to get people to, you know, see what they're missing when they don't, yeah, get these patron specials. So, and just as a reminder, we do have the new season of Trek About Presents starting tomorrow. If you're listening to this on the day that this is released, Tuesday, April 5th, on Wednesday, April 6th, we have our conversation about My Dinner with Andre coming out.
Ooh.
And then we'll be doing Clerks, Mallrats, and Chasing Amy the next 3 weeks. And also for next month's patron special, we are going to be doing kind of a similar thing when we did the conversation about Lo'Oxana Troi from a couple months ago. We're going to be looking at the Klingons.
Mm.
And we're going to be talking about, you know, whatever we want, but how they've changed, how they've grown, you know, how they're different from TOS and TNG. Like,
why they're
whatever.
The best. I'm trying to learn Klingon in preparation from this, but it's so hard.
Yeah, it is. I don't know why you would want to do that.
Sorry. Hairball.
Yes. So again, thank you very much for your lovely support. We really, really do appreciate it. We like doing this patron special for you every month. It's a nice way for us to kind of, you know, get
let
a little
our hair
loose
down.
Let our hair down and shake
Even
off the cobwebs.
I don't have hair.
I have hair. It's not very long, but I have it. So yeah, we'll be back another time next month for another patron special. And of course, every week, Trek About.